The setting of the parable we just heard is a wealthy estate. The rich owner or master receives a report that the steward has not been doing his job adequately and gives him 24 hours to make account. This demand throws the steward into a momentary panic. He does not fall apart, however, but faces up to his limitations honestly. He knows himself pretty well. He knows he's too out of shape to do manual labor and that he's too proud to beg. But he also knows that he is a man who can be decisive. As steward, he has charge over his master's business dealings, including those who have outstanding debts with his master. And so he is decisive. He confronts those who owe money and reduces the total amount of each debt, some by as much as 50%, others by 20%, if they will pay up immediately. His goal, it seems, is to create enough gratitude, enough goodwill, enough indebtedness of a different kind so that he has a place to land when he's fired. And so far, nothing seems terribly surprising about this parable. The thoughts and actions of the steward are self-serving, yes, but most of us can understand on some level this frantic, if not ethical, attempt to salvage what he can out of a desperate situation. But what is surprising in this parable is the master's reaction to all of this scrambling around by the steward. We have been led to understand that this master is a hard taskmaster. So we are surprised by his unexpected commendation of the steward for all of his shenanigans. In fact, the master seems pleased by the steward's response, which makes us scratch our heads and wonder what we're to make of this parable. Now, some have speculated that the master is pleased to have the debt recovered even if he never receives full interest on the loans, not unlike those TV commercials promising debt settlement with the IRS for a fraction of what is owed. And others suggest that the steward's reduction was equivalent to the percentage that he would expect the take, so that everyone but the steward comes out even and supposedly quite happy. Well, whatever the original intent was, if we're frank, the story ends without satisfying our curiosity. We do not know if the master ever received full payment on the loan, or if the steward in reducing the loan was giving up his own percentage. We do not know whether the master kept the steward in his employ or let him go. We do not know whether the steward's plan actually worked to his advantage. And so we're left with a parable that has a classic open ending. And so we're finally left with trying to figure out what in the world is Luke trying to get at here. With that in mind, it might be useful for us to look at where Luke has placed this parable in the context of his gospel. If you read this gospel front to back, the passages just before this parable are instructive. Jesus has just been talking to scribes and Pharisees in parables about the lost being found and the joyful celebrations that ensue. There is the woman who loses a coin and then throws a party when she finds it. And there's a shepherd who finds one sheep out of the flock who has been lost and then has a huge celebration with his friends at the recovery of one sheep. And then in the parable that just precedes this, Luke has just told the story of a father who welcomes home a wayward son, the prodigal, who has been lost. And when the prodigal is welcomed back to the family, his father puts on a lavish celebration, sparing no expense to express the joy he feels in being reconciled to his son, who was lost and presumed dead. And now Jesus turns to his disciples and says, "Have you heard what I've been telling you about? Let me tell you about the true value of possessions and wealth. Let me tell you about why this widow has a great celebration, or why the shepherd celebrates, or why the father celebrates and spends money at finding what is lost. And to do that, I'm going to tell you about this steward who found out the hard way that when he found himself in a twofold crisis, he responded. He had not only wasted his possessions that belonged to his master, but he's also been found out. And his behavior is not only a breach of financial responsibility, but also an act that affects his relationship with his master. And so let me tell you how he responds. As he quells his panic and begins to deal with the situation, he acts in two ways that are commendable. First, he accepts financial responsibility in reducing the debts, and at the same time, builds relationships. Whatever the outcome, whether he keeps his job or is fired, he has created goodwill with a variety of people. And Luke concludes that it is his resourcefulness, his vision for the future, his realization that in the long term, relationships are more important than resources, that becomes the teaching point for the disciples. Now, this parable makes little sense if we try to see it as a metaphor about God's dealing with us. The master is not God or Jesus, and the steward is not us. And instead, here is a classic how much more parable. If even a shifty steward realizes that relationships are of much more value than money, how much more should the children of light, people of faith, realize that true riches lie in community fellowship and service rather than accumulation of wealth or possessions? It is, in fact, as Jesus concludes, impossible to truly serve God if one is also trying to serve wealth and possessions. Now, the parable and the sayings that follow put us squarely in the middle of one of the oldest dilemmas known to humans. We may think that materialism and consumerism are North American 21st century phenomenon, but it's not. Luke's gospel bears witness to a larger reality that these issues were as real for people in the first century as they are for you and me. And the Gospel of Luke leaves us little room to rationalize our overabundance in our pursuit of even more. Beginning with this parable, Luke launches a series of parables, which we will hear in the weeks ahead, all designed to point his listeners to a better path in life. A path that, first, puts relationships over possessions, that honors God's desire to restore all people to unity to one another and with God, and that reveals the joy we seek in life that emerges when we use what we have been given to build community by fostering caring and compassionate relationships with one another. It is all about the great riches that we have in celebrating community and being part of such community. Now, we are entering a time of the year in the church when we focus and reflect on the blessings that we've received from God and how we use those gifts in our lives as being part of a greater community. Some of those gifts are intangibles, our abilities, our talents, and our relationships. And some are material, our money and our possessions. In its wisdom, the church encourages us to share these gifts to benefit not only ourselves and those closest to us, but people in our communities, our nation, and our world. And in doing so, building relationship, nurturing friendships, and seeking out the lost. Our motivation is to be appreciation for the blessings we have been given. Our reward is the joy that comes from being in right relationship, grounded in thankful giving and grateful receiving. Caring for and using the gifts God has given us to benefit the lives of people who are in need, to nurture relationships while building community, and to bring the love of God into people's lives is what being people of faith is all about. And that becomes the heart and soul of the communities that are based on faith. And all of this is what we call stewardship. When we embrace a life of stewardship, we experience a shift in our approach to life. No longer do we see the world from the perspective of a glass half empty philosophy. Instead, a glass half full mindset creates in us a sense of contentment with what we have and opens us up to a world of joyful possibilities as we recognize our abundance and seek to share that abundance with one another. Consider the parable we just heard of the steward. He seems to embrace that glass half full worldview. Instead of panicking and wringing his hands, crying, "Woe is me," and feeling sorry for himself, a sign that he sees only the negative in life, he collects himself and acts, seeing a positive outcome in the midst of a crisis, accumulating more money that has once dictated his behavior suddenly becomes a side issue for him. When all is said and done, it is relationships that are built that what saves him, not his accumulated wealth. And even his steward, concludes Luke, seems to grasp a worldview that is the worldview Jesus presents, a worldview of a glass half full perspective, one where we recognize our abundance and seek to share it with those around us. Now, is it possible to see this as a way of life for our churches? You know, we can wring our hands and cry, "Woe is me," and fall into a survival mentality. And in doing that, we can focus on what we do not have and try to spend our energy on how to accumulate that which will make us better. We can see our parishioners as people who will help provide us with what we need to survive, rather than as people who have something to offer. We can do that, and many churches do. But there is another way. We can focus on the relationships that we have in this community. We can value each other as valued members of this community and be joyful in the relationships that we forge with one another. We can expand those relationships by welcoming the newcomer, building relationships with them, and drawing them into the very fabric, the very life of the parish. That is an alternative worldview. And churches that accept and embrace that worldview become vibrant in quote, successful churches. As we enter a time of stewardship, we're faced with choices in our own lives and in the lives of this community. And the choice is ours, and the future of our parish will be determined in part by the path we choose. Can we be faithful in following Jesus? Can we embrace a life of stewardship? Can we recognize the abundance of our life and seek to share that abundance with one another? And if we can, by God's grace, God will bless us and keep us. And God's face will shine on us and be gracious to us. And God's countenance will fall upon us, and we will find a peace that surpasses understanding. And as people who experience and share that peace, we will be sharing the gospel of Christ with the world. A gospel that is based on loving our neighbor as we love ourselves, on serving others, not on being served, of being people of abundance, sharing our gifts, and valuing one another as precious people, God's children. Precious people, drawing others to this community and allowing this community to nurture and care for the members that we have and the lost who are to be found. May God bless us and keep us now and in the years to come. Amen.